Brian Boyle acquired by the Leafs yesterday. You heard that, and you said to yourself, what?
I said to myself, it's an improvement with their bottom six. And, you know, now you can ice a line with someone you're not concerned about from a shot metrics point of view, from any sort of metrics point of view. If the lesson in the NHL right now, Elliot, is whenever you get a chance to upgrade with skill, do it, then the Maple Leafs win this trade because they've improved their lineup. I would imagine at the end of the season they'll want to hopefully get Brian Boyle under a longer-term contract. He'll help the bottom six, and wherever you can improve, and this seems to be the lesson, you do it. And the Maple Leafs did that yesterday. Mike Babcock really does place a premium on faceoffs. He'll help there right away. He has, you know, size. He has experience. To me, considering that, you know, you only gave up Byron Fraser in a draft pick, this to me seems as close to being, you know, it's not a huge deal, right? So this comes to as close to being sort of a home run trade for the Maple Leafs as anyone's made so far. Jeff, outside of what Washington did with Kevin Shattenkirk.
Jeff Merrick, our guest, 8 o'clock is when it all kicks off on Sportsnet. You can follow along on Sportsnet.ca, the starting lineup with you tomorrow, obviously at 5:30, with some of the big Sportsnet names to get you prepped for an exciting Wednesday. I agree, and from an experience perspective, I know you can overrate experience, and we all can do it and say, you know, do you need 9, 10? Do you need to be the 94 Rangers with all these rings in the room? But the one thing I think Brian Burke really misstepped on, Jeff, was having nobody. I mean, nobody like a Brian Boyle who played 50 games in two straight playoff seasons with the Rangers in Tampa. There was nobody on that 13 team. I mean, Lupul had played a handful of playoff games. Nobody with playoff experience. And now Boyle's playoff experience dwarfs everybody else on the Maple Leafs.
You know, the one thing that I think we're learning with young teams right now in 2017, and maybe you call it the Oilers rule. You know, you need, if you're going to have a young team, if you're going to have a lot of kids, a lot of rookies in the lineup, you need to have veterans around to sort of shepherd them, to show them the way, but they can't be out of touch with the kids. Like, that was the Oilers' lesson, wasn't it? I mean, they would bring in Ryan Smith and bring in Andrew Ferentz, and in no way could Jordan Eberle or Taylor Hall relate to these guys. They were different life experiences, different places in their life as well. You still need to have players, A, that can be in the lineup consistently 5-on-5, and B, can still relate to players, can still relate to young kids. I get the impression that Brian Boyle is that guy more so than a Ryan Smith was to a Taylor Hall. Do you get that impression as well? Because I do.
It feels a little that way. That leads me to, let's ask about two guys, Doan and Aginla. And the circumstances are very, very different. We all know Doan's got the big ranch in Arizona. Listen, I know you'll never get the image of Elliot Friedman riding a horse out of your out of your head from that. And neither will Elliot. But it doesn't mean he's got to move his family from Arizona. You can hop on like a Ray Bourque. You can hop on like a couple other guys tried to. Even Wendell a couple times late in his career. Do you see, what do you see for Doan and Aginla tomorrow?
I mean, if someone grabs them, I mean, if you're a Stanley Cup team, this is the way I look at these two players. If you're a Stanley Cup team, if you're a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations and a legit chance to win the Stanley Cup, do they fit anywhere near your top six? No, they're bottom six guys. And do Shane Doan and Jerome Aginla really bring you value, you know, in a significant way to help you win the Stanley Cup if they're bottom six guys? You know, we all love what Shane Doan's done. We all love what Jerome Aginla's done. But, I mean, they can see the clubhouse now. I mean, it's not just back nine. It's, okay, putt for par, and we're into the clubhouse with these two guys. I don't, honestly, I really don't see either of them going anywhere because I don't know where the market for Shane Doan and Jerome Aginla is right now, considering the pace at which the NHL has played, to say nothing about the regular season, the pace at which the game is played in the playoffs now leaves these two guys in the dust. And I don't think there's a spot on anyone's power play for Jerome Aginla to wind up and take one-timers from the half wall. And you can say all you want about, you know, the leadership of Shane Doan. If you're a Stanley Cup contender right now, you've got enough of that in your room, I'm guessing. It'll be tough to move these guys. And if they go anywhere, I don't think it's for A, significant pieces coming back or picks, and B, I don't think it's a significant spot in anyone's lineup for a Stanley Cup run.
You're listening to The Starting Lineup with Brady and Price. Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Jeff Marek, host on NHL on Sportsnet. The two biggest dangling forwards, Duchesne and Landeskog, same team. You see either of these guys moving, and what's that going to cost when you see what Shattenkirk went for?
No pressure, right? No pressure for Joe. I'm serious, like no pressure for Joe Sakic. He doesn't have to make these deals. I mean, you can make this, you can make a Deshane or a Landeskog deal at the draft when the market opens up more. You can make it in the summer when it opens up even more and everyone's cap situation is a little more clear. Like the one thing about Joe Sakic in all of this is he can ask for, you know, a number one prospect, a number one, you know, a first line player, and a top four defenseman. He can ask for that. Teams can scoff at it. He has asked teams for that. And if he doesn't get it, that's fine. He's in no way, shape, or form under any pressure to move these guys from deadline on deadline. So if unless anyone, Elliott, completely knocks Joe Sakic's socks off, he has no reason to trade Deshane or Landeskog right now. He can play the long game on this one and just wait it out.
Do you look at Washington, Jeff, and say the pressure, like when you've won the cup at least once in the last few years? So when you're Chicago, when you're L.A., even when you're the Rangers and you've been there, I don't know that there's anything quite like what the Capitals face. I had a friend of mine tell me last night, they're like, the Pens, maybe they would have had an interest in Shattenkirk, but they don't mind seeing Washington get him and overpay. Like, they are rivals. So it's sort of like the Detroit, Colorado, and Dallas used to have these arms races headed to the playoffs in the West. Pittsburgh doesn't mind if this really screws up Washington over the next couple of years and Shattenkirk doesn't deliver.
It's an interesting one because I saw Brian Lawton tweet about it yesterday from NHL Network, and I said, wow, the Washington Capitals in on Kevin Shattenkirk? I mean, this is a team that has Matt Niskanen, who, by the way, is having an outstanding year for the Washington Capitals. Like, it's like, you know, close to Norris Trophy quality that Matt Niskanen is turning
into. And everyone complained about that deal originally. He might be finally earning it now.
Well, I mean, come 2021, I don't think the 5.7 is going to look nice, but still, your point is well made. Right now, it's good. He's 30 years old, but we're getting there with him. Carlson, Alsner, Dmitry Orlov, who once upon a time we all thought was going to, you know, get pitched on the Vegas scrap heap. He's had a really nice season. I don't think that anyone looked at the Washington Capitals and said, yeah, you know what? If they just had one more piece on the blue line, to me, I kept circling back to Pittsburgh, which we understand was another team that was looking for Kevin Shattenkirk because, I mean, whether you look at the injuries or the ability to move the puck out of their zone, I mean, that's where Kevin Shattenkirk really can really help a team. You mentioned arms race, and that's what it looks like right now. And the window for the Washington Capitals, considering, you know, they'll probably lose TJ Oshie, they'll probably lose Justin Williams, they'll probably lose Carl Alsner at the end of the season. I think you can legitimately make the case that this is the last season for it. Mm. Like, this is our year or bust season for the Washington Capitals. Last year, they could have very well won it. They ran into a hot goaltender with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, that was the difference. That was it. Many had them as a Stanley Cup favorite. The arms race is fascinating now because, you know, this does free Matt Niskanen up, I suppose, from the power play to some extent to play more 5-on-5. You can now have Kevin Shattenkirk on the power play if you choose to go that route, although John Carlson seems to be that cross-ice pass to Alexander Ovechkin to feed him the grapes. I love it. I love when a team completely goes for it and completely loads up, even though you look at the blue line, you say to yourself, it's already a murderer's row with the Washington Capitals. Where's Kevin Shattenkirk going to fit into this mix? But I like it. I like what Washington's doing, and this is their year, and I think management knows it, and I think the players know it as well.
I got about a minute. Alex Burrows to Ottawa, Jordy Benn to the Canadiens. How much better did those two teams get?
I like what Bergevin's doing with Montreal. I know it's just small pieces. He'll probably fish for a big one come tomorrow, but whether it's the deal with Tampa we saw a couple of weeks ago, and now the Jordy Benn deal, he's helping his bottom pairings with a guy that can consistently play in Jordy Benn, unlike Greg Patterson, who had a hard time getting himself into the lineup. The Ottawa one is fascinating. If you're a big prospects person, you hate this one. Jonathan Dahlin, Ulf Dahlin's son, is lighting it up in Timrå in the Swedish league. He's a legit prospect, a wonderful skater, a shoot-first type center. He's more of a goal scorer than a playmaker, so you hate the deal. But then you say to yourself, Ottawa's in a different place than Vancouver. They don't need to worry about prospects right now. Plus, they already have Colin White coming. He'll play as early as next season for them. I just don't know at 36 years old what Alex Burrows is going to bring to the Ottawa Senators, and not just this year, but those two extra years as well. And the one thing we found out in the salary cap era, you don't get hurt when you pay your big guys your money. You get hurt when you pay your middle guys a little bit too much. And I look at the Alex Burrows 2-year contract extension, and I say to myself, man, that's going to be a tough one for the Senators and their fans to swallow soon.